This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. There is in Durham a fairly well-known brontosaurus on the grounds of the Museum of Life and Science. It's on a path called the Dinosaur Trail, and it has fueled imaginations of many of the young people who've seen it. One of those kids was Tim Revis. He went to school at NC State, wrote a poem that features a young child who imagines himself riding the bronto through Durham. And last year, that fantastic childhood journey also captured the imaginations of two NC State students who decided to turn Tim's poem into a film.
Durham is famous for its dinosaurs. I used to think they were real, and I was going to ride one, but when we got out of the car, I saw that they weren't moving, and I just thought they were sad or old. But now I know they're just statues. Someone stole the head of the brontosaurus when I was in the 7th grade, but they gave it back. That's the one I would have ridden, the brontosaurus. We were going to march out of the museum parking lot and take a triumphant walk through the bare-knuckled woods near 9th Street, and we were going to tear down some trees and sit on a few cars, and I would feel safe because I'm riding a freaking dinosaur.
It is part of the 5-minute film called The Strong One. It was made in a week, entered into the National Campus Movie Fest competition, and it swept the awards. Josh Bielek did cinematography, Nick Seiler directed it, and the three filmmakers journeyed to Sundance, so they were on their way. Josh, Nicholas, and Tim join us in the studio today. Welcome. It's good to have you here.
Welcome.
Good to be
Thanks.
Here.
Thank you for having us.
So, Tim, how long have you been writing poems?
I'd say for about 3 years now. It started with a poetry class at NC State, and I've just kind of taken it from there.
And what was the behind this poem? What was the genesis of this poem?
It was actually a class assignment. We were meant to write a poem about where we were from. Of course, I'm from Durham. Originally, the brontosaurus was just a segment in that poem, and it kind of, you know, took over the poem eventually and kind of became the centerpiece.
And you take us on a tour of parts of Durham, name
yes.
some places. What was special about those landmarks that you mm-hmm. named along the way?
Well, each was kind of a very poignant landmark for me and memories of my childhood. My father used to take me to the Museum of Life and Science a lot when I was a kid. So the brontosaurus was a very, very powerful figure for me in my childhood. So that's why that kind of became what I chose to use to explore Durham. And these other scenes are scenes from my childhood.
Now, it could have been just a nostalgic look back at your childhood, mm-hmm. But it also includes your parents' divorce, a very mm-hmm. important part of this.
Yes. And now kind of how I chose to use the dinosaur was also not only a place to just kind of walk past these scenes in Durham, but to use it as a mechanism to reconcile with some of these situations that make you feel powerless as a child, which obviously the poem kind of climaxes at the divorce of my parents. So he was there with me in that moment kind of thing, and that's...
Well, let's listen to the end of the film.
He was going to be there with me in the morning in the kitchen when my parents' unwashed words would finally spill out of their mouths like sad old silverware. When they would tell my brother and I they were getting divorced, and we were going to run off, the three of us, and he was going to run as fast as he could, and we were going to hold on as tight as we could, and I was going to feel safe as long as I was riding that dinosaur. And on the days when I forget, I go back to the museum, and he reminds me who the Strong One is.
There it is, the last segment of a film called The Strong One. It's a 5-minute film. Tim Revis wrote the poem. Josh Bielek did the cinematography, and Nick Seiler on the film that grew out of it. So let me ask you, Josh and Nick, and I don't know who wants to take the question, how did the idea for a film come about?
I have to say it was definitely at a reading when I heard Nick read some of his poetry. They're extremely visual. You know, you can stand there and sort of see this painted in front of you as he's reading it. I think I'm very keen to some of those visual elements, and I saw it and I thought, you know, Tim, this really has to come to life, and I would love to be the person to do it. So definitely I was in the audience of Tim doing that, and then realized that I could maybe add something to that, maybe.
Did you guys know each other before this?
The cool thing about that is I had actually not met Josh last fall, or I didn't know him last fall. We had both entered a film into the Campus Movie Fest the previous year, and so we were aware of each other's work, but we hadn't actually met each other. So we met each other last fall around the same time that Josh was sort of in talks with Tim about his poem. And I knew I wanted to make a film for this year's Campus Movie Fest, and I spoke with Josh. We hit up a conversation, started talking about a collaboration, and it was right about the same time that Josh was in the talks with Tim.
So what's it like to take somebody else's story like this, kind of a deep story in a lot of ways, and then turn it into a film, which is a whole other has a whole other creative life?
Sure. I think we've mentioned this a couple of times, is that there's something that almost everyone in the audience at least can connect with the story. There's elements of childhood that, you know, we've all experienced, these powerless moments, or these, you know, we need a rescuer, we need that strong device. I think for a lot of us, there's something we saw in it ourselves, or there's something that we could bring to life in different perspectives. So it brought a lot of value there, I think.
Tim, is there anything about seeing this thing as a film that changed the way the poem felt to you?
Most definitely. I mean, obviously, it's taken on a whole new life when you get to sit there and not only listen to yourself, kind of revisit these scenes, but to see it happen in front of you. It's very therapeutic in many ways. I know it is for myself, and you know, I'm sure that a lot of people feel the same way about it, which we're thankful for.
Now, it's pretty literal. You pretty much go to the places along the way, and we get to watch the scenes. Was there any thought of sort of layering other kinds of because it's also a 5-minute film, right? So is that, did you want to do that? You want to keep it short and keep it kind of faithful to the text?
Yeah, well, there actually were some small things that we did change. Originally, the poem was called Jurassic Parking Lot. And
that's a big change. Yeah, yes. It's a strong one. Yeah.
So we'd been talking about some different titles, and then we sort of found the strong one as that one strong line in the poem and pulled that out as the title. But there were some small things that we changed. There's one scene where Tim, as a young boy, rides by this girl, Ashley's house, and we changed some small things with that just because the day that we were shooting, it was raining, and so we wanted to incorporate that into the poem. We changed a couple things just by location. For example, we shot the divorce scene in a kitchen, and so Tim sort of used that location to inform that scene. Yeah. And then actually one of probably the biggest change that we did was the last small portion where Tim comes back to the brontosaurus and revisits that part of his childhood. It was actually a scene that we added, and me and Josh had talked about that, and then we asked him to write that last line.
So, you talked about it being raining that day, and a listener might say, well, why didn't you wait a day? But the fact is, according to the rules, you had 7 days to do this film, right?
That's certainly right.
How crazy is that?
You know, it obviously, it will discipline you. You know, you've got to have your ducks in order, and you've got to have your pre-production done and storyboards drawn and things like that. Otherwise, you can't show up and think about, well, what are we going to do now? You know, it's raining. So a lot of thought beforehand, for sure.
Tim, does this change? Well, first of all, had you thought about being a writer when you were doing these poems, and now are you thinking about filmmaking? How has this changed your career plans, or has it?
I'm still writing poetry, and it's, you know, just kind of been a really big encouragement for me to continue writing poetry. I still don't, you know, see myself really going into film per se as a screenwriter or anything, even though, who knows, I may decide to try my hand at it. But, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed this project and would like to be involved in similar projects in the future.
You picked up some awards, right? You picked up a bunch of the Movie Fest.
Yeah, Campus Movie Fest at Campus Movie Fest Grand Finale in Hollywood this summer. We won Best Picture, and I won Best Directing. So we were very, very blessed to receive this.
Because that's a big deal. That's all over the good nationwide competition.
Yeah.
And then you're on your way to – or have you been to Cannes?
So the film screened at Cannes in the short film corner on behalf of us by CMF. So they did it for us.
Oh, I see. So winning that gets you to Cannes. So what was that like?
I think we were excited over in the side.
We actually weren't able to go there.
Oh, man. How'd that happen?
It was a...
get on your Bronco and ride.
We should have. We should have. But But yeah, like you said, we have submitted it to Sundance, so we'll be hearing back from them in December whether or not it will be shown there. So it's going to be screening at SparkCon in downtown Raleigh in September.
In September. So what? Any feedback from Con? Did you hear anything from?
I think we heard some good things from the Canvas Movie Fest people that were there. They promoted it a lot, and we're very blessed to have them do that.
Very supportive.
Very supportive, yeah.
Do the Campus Movie Fest entries tend to be in the 5 minutes? I mean, if you've only got a week to make it, I'm guessing they're all short. Is there a time limit on those films?
Yeah, that's actually the time constraint. Yeah.
Which is probably a good thing. If you've got a week to make it, it's nice to know that somebody couldn't come up with an epic. What does this teach you about filmmaking? Are you, Josh, let me ask you first, if you're going to go into filmmaking, is this a career choice?
Absolutely. It's something I've sort of done since childhood. And, you know, there's probably embarrassing videos out there on the internet somewhere. but no, it's taught me a lot, you know, to gather my things and to refine skill sets and to work really hard towards something. And to pursue a passion, you know, whether or not it seems prohibitive, whether it be cost or time or what you think might be the outcome of it. So,
what about you, Nick? What'd you learn in this project?
It was really cool because I was able to take someone else's story that was very real to them and turn it into a visual sort of medium, which was really cool. Most of the other projects that I've worked on, they were things that I have written or they sort of originated from me. And so this was different because it originated with Tim, but I was able to take it and make it into something else.
So what are your boyhood memories, and are you thinking now of turning them into either a poem or a movie or both?
I actually have put some of my memories down into short story form, so we'll see what happens with that.
Short story, and you want to leave it that way, or are you thinking it'll become a screenplay?
It could become a screenplay. I was thinking about that. I don't want to necessarily just be like grounded into like adapting people's childhood memories.
Start there,
even though they're very poignant. I mean, there's something to be said about childhood memories, and because I think obviously everyone has them, and everyone can relate to them, and a lot of times those memories are things that shape you over the rest of your life.
Josh, how about you? In terms of memories and trying to work them into films,
absolutely.
Is that a project for you?
I think part of that was shaping Tim's story into film, was, you know, taking the things that I saw in childhood and the things that I was excited about, or the museum aspect even. Mm-hmm. I mean, I loved the museum as a kid. Things like that you can always use as like your unique perspective. You know, that's the gift you were given, is having that perspective on things and having that growing up experience. You can use that for the rest of your life to shape the way that your art comes out. So
Tim, do you go back and visit the Brontosaurus frequently?
We've actually gotten a couple chances to go back after the project and take pictures and see it again, and it of course has a whole new meaning for us now, because it's, you know, it's not just a childhood emblem for me anymore. It's this, you know, journey that we've taken together through this project. So it means that much more to me and to us, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Now,
are you going to collaborate on another project?
I see that as a high probability.
Yeah. What about this film? It's interesting to have a script, a text like this, which is a poem, which means you don't have dialogue to work with. Is that liberating? Is that a constraint? How did that work in the process? Let me start with you, Josh.
Sure. I think maybe one of the initial decisions that made it turn out that way was, I believe in like playing your strengths, and that's just something that's extremely hard to have happen in a small production, where you're really relying on the things that you know you can drive home in a good production sense. So I think the voiceovers is something that we knew was very powerful in driving through the scenes, and very indicative of like the style that we wanted to have, which was like this flowing memory and scenes and sort of montage of taking you through the experience.
How about directing this, the idea of syncing or timing the action to the stanzas themselves, to the verses?
Yeah, it was very interesting. A lot of the timing and things like that came out in the editing process. So we knew we had to have certain scenes, a certain length. We couldn't go further than that, or else there'd be, you know, the big gaps between the stanzas. But it was really cool working with something that was just a voiceover, really. That was something I had not really done before, and I was very excited to take on that challenge. And it worked so well because both the visuals and the voiceover, the narration, can sort of be separate, but when they come together, they're so much more powerful.
It does put a lot of pressure, it seems to me, on the visuals. The text does work, and it's a wonderful text by itself, but that means that the visuals, we don't have interaction. There aren't people talking to each other. Dialogue is its own dynamic. Without it, there's a lot of pressure on the visuals. Any visuals stand out for you, Josh, in this production?
You know, I think shooting on location had a lot to do with it. You know, there's so much value in shooting at the actual Brontosaurus and the actual buildings. And, you know, these scenes are almost set up for us, you know, to capture. I think sometimes just paying attention to the small details that you might just overlook as you're driving by are sometimes, you know, impressionable enough to stand out and to connect with someone. So,
guys, thanks for talking with us. Good luck at Sundance.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On the State of Things today, Tim Revis, Nick Seiler, and Josh Bielik, the filmmakers behind The Strong One. That's our program for today. Thanks for listening to The State of Things, a program produced by Alex Granados and Sean Nguyen. Sarah Edwards and Stella Strohmeyer are our interns. Robin Copley is the technical director. Peter Bombar sitting in today. Managing editor Lindsay Foster Thomas. Susan Davis is our senior producer. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.